Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to this week's episode of Radio Established to Address Life. We are here. What's buzzing, cousin?
Hey, can't call it, cuz. How you doing, fam?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Dig it. Pressed for time today, so we wanted to change it up no matter what, because over the past couple of weeks, man, it's been a whole lot of fucking doom and gloom, and though there's some snow forecasted for this side of the earth, we wanted to lighten things up a little bit just to have some fun. There's a lot of good things that are going on this week amongst the other things. And, you know, we'll get the seriousness, we'll hit it and we'll quit it and we'll move on. But there's been some very good stuff in the news over the past couple of days. Wanted to bring that stuff out. It's exciting right now, time of the year. If you are a sports fan, female or male, it's March Madness. Obviously, that thing is just totally crazy. Want to get on that. The father that finally got custody of his daughter, the father and son who do the Instagram videos with them dancing together. Just unfortunate of the Ravens player passing away, the plane crash in Russia, the Super Sunday, which turned into just a whopping, Super Tuesday, which turned into a whopping of a Tuesday. The officer shot here in Maryland by friendly fire, who was shot on purpose. He was undercover. He was shot on purpose. You know, again, hit that stuff, man. Get out of that stuff and move on, because God damn, it's been a lot of gloom over the past couple of weeks, and it's not looking to get any better, especially as Trump continues to win and fight. It's not looking to get any better in general. The terrorist responsible for the Paris attacks, he was caught just yesterday. He was in plain sight for the most part, walking around Brussels just chilling, you know, but he was finally caught up to yesterday. Yeah, you know, North Korea still showing its ass, trying to flex its muscle. Just, I really was looking for the good. You know, we talked and it's like, yo, what's the good? The award that we got on Wednesday. You know, that's the good. That's the shit. You know, gotta bring some of that energy in this, man, because if not, you will get just downtrodden and beat every freaking time you look up. It's crazy. Starting in Russia, a plane was trying to land at an airport. The tail clipped the runway. All 62 people on board the plane were killed. That's not how you want to start a damn Saturday. That's just not how you want to start a Saturday. Okay, really? That's just how we start on our Saturday? Yeah, that's how we start on our Saturday.
So let's do this, man, real quick. Tell everybody a little bit about the award, Black Wall Street, man.
Okay. All right, well, on Wednesday, we were honored with a Joe Buck Award at Black Wall Street, Brooklyn. We went up to Weeksville, Brooklyn, which, if you don't know it, you are not amongst the many. You are, you are not amongst the few. You are amongst the many. Weeksville is a black community that was established shortly after the abolition of slavery in New York State. It was purchased just 12 years after the first plot of land was purchased 12 years just after the abolition of slavery in New York State. And it grew, not huge, it wasn't a huge city, but it grew to a nice size. And the residents occupied it actively up until the 30s or 40s. And then the majority of the original residents either died off or they just totally moved away. There was a niece of one of the original residents who stayed until the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and then she finally moved away. Now, the beautiful part is the homes were still intact. There were five homes still intact, and I'm stuttering on that because the fifth home burnt down and it was recreated. So there were five homes still intact from the original plot. And, I mean, original homes. Two of the homes, when you walked in, they felt like freaking Matchbox homes. They were small. I mean, really small. But you still had families of 8 to 10 people living in these homes. And, dude, small. I mean, really, really. That's the only word. I'm looking at the furniture, and the furniture looks like toy furniture. It looks like furniture that you would give to your kids, but this was furniture for a family, for real. You know what I'm saying? There was no indoor plumbing, obviously. There was a mud room, so you actually entered the home from the back, which where the mud room was, and then you came, you know, clean off your shoes, so on and so forth, before you came into the front room. And that's all it was. You know, there wasn't a whole lot. Now, there was a home right next to it, very similar, but it was a couple of years advanced, and that home actually had a rug on it. Not a handmade rug, but a textile-type rug. The third home we went into was actually two-story. Still no indoor plumbing as of yet, but it was two-story. If there was more room in that one, the furniture was larger, so on and so forth. The fourth home that we went into was the residency, I believe, of the Williams family, and they were the last family to leave. And that home had running water. They had a summer home, quote unquote, which was more like a screened-in porch where they canned food and saved food, so on and so forth. And they actually built a brick garage because, again, this family didn't leave until late 70s, early 80s. So they built a brick garage. So that was cool. But they had, you know, full-blown kitchen, running water. What really caught my attention, my eye, though, was no space was wasted. You know, like now we have these elaborate hallways and all that. They didn't have no hallways. Like, every inch was a portal to something. You know, there may have been 8 inches between one room and the next room, but there was the next room. Like, the third home we went into upstairs, there were four bedrooms, and they were all connected. you walk in one and you can you walk in the master bedroom and you can walk from the master bedroom to the other three bedrooms. They were all connected. And then the Williams home, again, same situation. You walked in the master bedroom, you can walk through all, and that was 1, 2, 5 bedrooms. You could walk through every bedroom, and then through one of the third bedroom that actually connected to the bathroom. And there was a way to get to that bathroom either from the staircase, which led directly into the bathroom, or through that third bedroom. And there was a door right there into the bathroom as well. So, yeah, man, it was serious. No space was wasted at all. But Black Wall Street is a series hosted by Donnie Glover of VMoreNews.com. He has taken this thing not only locally within the confounds of the state of Maryland, but also to Atlanta, to New Orleans, to New York. And that was not his first time in New York. He was actually in New York 3 times. Twice in Harlem. No. Yeah, 3 times. Twice in Harlem and then once in Brooklyn. And he felt the need to take it to Brooklyn because the Brooklyn is also a huge community filled with African Americans. So he wanted to go there. It was an honor to be honored. It was just recognition of the work that we do, the message that we're trying to send to the peoples, and that's what's up. There are some additional plans to do some Black Wall Street award ceremonies here in Baltimore. We were in conversation about going to Toronto soon, and I actually am plugging to go back to New Orleans. Atlanta will probably fall somewhere between then, and then we were just talking about, we drove up, so it was a lot of time for us to talk, and we were just talking about strategic places to go in the near future. So just be aware that we might be coming to a hood near you pretty soon, to be honest with you.
So tell everybody, you know, who's interested, who's listening, how to get involved with the Black Wall Street movement.
Well, it's not about how you get involved, to be honest. It's you know, continue to do what you do, and we'll come for you, to be honest. Just continue to do what you do, and we'll find you. It's the award ceremony recognizes folks who are having a positive impact in their community. That's what it's about. It's about recognizing business owners who every day wake up, grind, and make America work. That's all it's about. The thing that's needed as we continue with the series are venues so we can have it. It doesn't usually take long, 1 hour, 2 hours max. It's all about the recognizing the folks, allowing them to have their say, presenting them with the awards, taking the photographs, handshaking, because it turns into a meet and greet, a mixer, a business mixer, if you will, as it should, because you're bringing together people who may not know one another at all but could benefit from the services of each other. So, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, and we'll definitely find you. You know, we're definitely coming to a city near you without a doubt. You know, I'm also thinking about Detroit,
yeah,
because as Detroit comes back, right, as Detroit comes back and Detroit rebounds, you know, those folks who are making it happen on the ground deserve to be recognized for that. You know, this is about helping others as they go and fight the fight every day, and saying thank you for fighting the fight so they can make a way for somebody else to come behind and pick up the baton and carry it a little bit further. So definitely very, very, but the tour, we had, there's actual, not necessarily a museum per se, but it is sort of a museum there on site. And then you go outside and that's where the homes actually are. And we were given the tour by the executive director. That was awesome. She was cool as a fan, and she gave us the history and the fact that there weren't a lot of artifacts found at the site that of like a lot of value, but there were simple things found like soda bottles, you know, that tell great stories about what life was like and what the people did who were there. There were bones found of animals that were either domesticated for the property or used for food on the property. And there's no direct link between Weeksville and the Underground Railroad. However, it makes sense because of its location.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that there were free blacks there, that they would have some dealings with the Underground Railroad in some form or fashion. So, but again, there's no documented facts or proof that it served as a station for the Underground Railroad. But it was a very interesting time, man. I never heard of it. Most of the people there never heard of it. Even those that were from New York, specifically Brooklyn, never heard of it. It was like, wow, it really, and the homes really transported you into the past. Like, wow, the third home, not the Williams home, but the third home, they had gas lights, and you know, they restored the homes to their original condition as best they could, you know, so. They actually had the gas lines flowing through to the lights. It's like, damn, that's what that used to look like. You know what I'm saying? Right. It was amazing. And a lot of the furniture was the original furniture donated by the residents, family members of the residents, so on and so forth. So there was a copy of the North Star newspaper, which was Frederick Douglass's newspaper. There was a copy of, there was another newspaper, and the name of it is slipping my name right now. It's slipping my mind right now, but I'll remember more than likely before we get off and go back to that. But it was like, it really was a very humbling experience, not only because of the award, but also being in that place of greatness and just feeling that connection to the past. It was like, wow, it was a great day.
And you know what, because that's the important thing that you mentioned was about how people who are actual residents of Brooklyn never heard about Weeksville, and I never heard about it, but listening to the stories that have been told about it, it brings the point that we have African American history and heritage is really a lost heritage. Like, we don't know the things that we really should know. You know, I tell people all the time that it's really important to go beyond the textbooks and what you learn in school, because, you know, it's controlled, you know, but once you're out of school, you can really, dive deeper into your heritage and really discover the greatness that is African-American history. You know, not only Weeksville, it's another setting in New York. I cannot remember the name of this island, but it's another particular island where it was occupied by all African Americans, and it had the same kind of mindset. I forget the name. I'll pull it up eventually, but it was a documentary about it on TV recently. And again, it just goes to show that for ages, African Americans have been prosperous, and has been a strong race to really push forward beyond the shackles, beyond the chains, beyond the oppression, and continue to thrive. So, again, big ups to Real Radio, big ups to Black Wall Street, and the movement. I can't wait to see the rest of the tour and hear more stories about Black Wall Street, later on down the line, man. It's good stuff. I'm proud of us.
Well, AIM, it's a concerted effort, to be honest with you. No one did it by his or herself. So I thank everyone who has been a part of the show ever, just from the listeners to the guests to the research team to, anyone who's ever touched the mic as a contributor. That's what's up. And I look forward to continuing this path for some time to come. It was very humbling, though, again, and I know I'm repeating myself, but just I can't really describe the feeling, man. I was tired because it was an early day, had to get there, had to be on time, obviously. Long night because there were some other folks there. Mark Clark, shout out to Mark Clark. If you're not familiar with him, get familiar. Great journalist. He works in New York. He used to work here in Baltimore. I worked with him at Radio 1. He got honored, and some other folks were honored. The museum itself got honored. That was important to do and to speak on. So it was a great day, man. And the next day I had to be to work, and that was another early day because I had to get my mind right and get. I rented a car to go up, had to get the car back and all that type jazz, and I was tired as all giddy up. But I was walking around the entire day with a smile on my face, just like, wow, this was, there was no way in the world that I would have wanted to miss that. No way in the world. And it was worth every moment. But be that as it may, there's some other stuff going on. Fox versus the Fox. And the Fox, the other Fox, the Fox in this case, is the Trump. So Trump has been calling out Megyn Kelly right and left, right and left, right and left. Well, Fox News finally took exception to it, and they have hit back at Trump very, very strong. Trump's latest comments are calling Megyn Kelly sick and overrated, and has been calling for his supporters to boycott her show on Fox News. Now, this is about business. Fox News took exception to this when he started calling on his supporters to boycott her show. That knocks down their ratings. That messes with their money. They ain't having it. So now they started striking back at the Republican frontrunner. I want to see how that plays out because they just canceled the debate the other day. And I'm getting some feedback from you, cousin.
Hold on 1 second.
They just canceled the debate just the other day because he dropped out of it. He said he wasn't going to show up, so they canceled the debate because he wasn't going to show. So I really want to see how far they're willing to take this beef with Trump. I don't think it's going to go too daggone far, especially not after Super Tuesday, in which he won 4 out of the 5 states. He took Florida, Illinois, Missouri, and North Carolina. Kasich only held strong in Ohio. He took Florida so strongly that Rubio dropped out of the race. If you don't know, Rubio is a senator from the great state of Florida, and he wound up dropping out of the race. Sadly, on the same day, Hillary took all 5 states as well, Ohio, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, and Florida. It looked like Bernie actually won Missouri and may have requested a recount, but he declined to do so, letting the process move forward. Now, right about now, they are roughly at half of the – he is roughly at half of the delegates that she has in order for the nomination. She's extremely close to the nomination right now. He's at roughly half the delegates that she has right now. I think he's going to stay in it to the end, but I'm pretty certain that Super Tuesday spelled the end for Bernie, to be honest with you. At this point, it's all about standing behind your policy, your front runner, and pumping them to the finish line, unless you're a Republican, because they're fighting right and left, left and right, to not have Trump win the nomination, talking about some foolishness being pulled at the convention, potentially withholding delegates on the first vote so that someone else can be submitted on the second vote to take the lead and the baton for the Republicans moving forward. Now, the judicial, well, not the judicial committee, but the rules committee said that they were not in favor of that, but they don't really have the say-so in holding anybody about it. It's not against the rules. It's just not what they would want to see. So we'll see about that. It's drawing nearer, very much nearer. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, it's sad that whom I believe are the best voices in this whole fight will never make it out the gate, and that's Kasich and Bernie Sanders, to be honest with you. I've listened to them. I've paid attention to their platforms, and I think they truly have the best interests of the country in their hearts. They may go about it differently. I may not agree with all of their policies, but I would love to to have this had been a debate between the two of them and a decision being made at that point, to be honest with you. It's not a knock about having the first woman in office. I don't care about that. If it happens, I'm fine with that. I don't have that type of mentality or mindset, but I just believe that what these cats are selling, I can buy, and it will sell very nicely throughout the world without the distractions that Hillary and Bill will bring to the office and or Donald Trump will bring to the office, because, let's be honest, he's an idiot. It is what it is.
If you really think about it, man, the dream that they're selling is the same dream that President Obama was selling. And like you said, it's the American dream. But most of the candidates don't want to sell the American dream. Well, most of the candidates that are winning, the people who support them don't support the American dream. They support my dream. What are you going to do for me, not for the country? And that's why, you know, some people are saying that President Obama has not been successful and he's destroyed America, is because everything that he's done has been in favor of America in its entirety. It hasn't been for one particular group. That's why he's getting the backlash he's getting now for not appointing a female to the Supreme Court, because it was a specific group's agenda to have a certain nominee, and he went with what's best for all of America, in his opinion. But again, Kasich and Sanders, their dreams is for all of America, you know, every nationality, every group, and that's really not what's fitting for the majority right now. The majority wants to protect their own interests, and their ideas go against that.
Do you really think that Merrick Garland, the young man that President Obama has nominated to the Supreme Court, is the best fit for the nation?
Oh no, I don't think so. That it's the best fit, and that's like I said, was in President Obama's opinion, this is what is best overall. I think a big part of it was like what was said, is that President Obama had to pick a nominee that would get confirmed immediately. So his strategy was, hey, let's give them this instead of going with, you know, what the status quo wants. So, hey, okay, Here's your nominee. Let me see you deny this guy. You know what I'm saying? So definitely wasn't the best, but one of the best.
No, please go. Here's my thought. It's a ploy. He wanted to hit the Republicans where it hurt, because some of these jokers have come out directly and said, hey, if President Obama wants to select an anomaly, he could easily, you know, nominate Merrick Garland. He's a great guy. Now he did it, and they're like, we can't talk to him. We're going to let the people decide. But as president, he got elected by the people, therefore – I think the people have already spoken, but that's a different story for a different time. Now, I think, too, it's another ploy, because he gives them Merrick Garland. He's not really a conservative, but he
ain't quite a liberal.
He's a moderate. He's more of a moderate. So he gives him up as a moderate, and then he comes back and puts in a liberal. Because then it signals the Greensburg, okay, you can retire now, and I'll appoint a liberal in your spot. Because that's her concern. Honestly, I think that's her concern. She doesn't want to retire until she's sure that the court is still going to be as balanced as possible. You know what I'm saying? So I think she's waiting on that thing to happen. And if that happens, he would have appointed four Supreme Court justice. He would have changed the entire court. Essentially, he would change American history for a generation easily because of his Supreme Court nomination. That is off the chain. That's really off the chart. Four Supreme Court nominations.
And again, another milestone for a president who wasn't supposed to be elected once, let alone twice, and who still is, you know, underappreciated and has done nothing but make America bad.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely nothing. He's done absolutely nothing. Moving on.
Not a drop.
Some doom. I want to go down south, and we're going to start in Florida. So if you haven't heard, you caught in the beginning, Trey Walker was a cornerback for the Baltimore Ravens. He passed away just yesterday after a dirt bike accident, which he was involved in. Supposedly he was riding on the dirt bike at night without lights. The first reports I heard was he had no helmet on either. And he collided with the Ford SUV. Right, he collided with the Ford SUV. Now, a dirt bike and a truck never mix well together, but, you know, hey, Florida does require you to wear a helmet. This young man, unfortunately, he was 23 years old. He was picked fourth in the fourth round last year by the Ravens. He attended Texas Southern University, and he had a bright future ahead of him, but for whatever his reason, he made this choice, and unfortunately, it cost him his life. Now, I'm stepping on this gingerly, and I'll be honest with you, because I had a totally different approach to this. My approach to it was going to be not ignorant, but it was going to be honest. And I was talking to a young man last night at work, and he was like, well, you never want to really say that because the man died. And I was like, well, dude, he should have known better. I mean, let's be real. There are other examples of this happening and them not going well. He's old enough to know about Jason Williams. He may not be old enough to know about Bobby Hurley, but he's old enough to remember what happened to Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger got hurt up a couple of years ago. This wasn't that long ago. This was still when he was either in high school or junior high. But either way, you know, you start playing football right around 8, and you focus on that goal of making the NFL. So he should have known. Roethlisberger has not been in the league 15 years, so definitely he should have known. This should not be news to him. You know, what's the cat's name? The quarterback for Cam Newton. Cam Newton. What was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Cam got into that auto accident.
Vehicle rolled.
You know what I'm saying? Come on, dude. Come on. You're riding a dirt bike at night, no lights, dark clothing, no helmet. Okay. No, I'm not trying to be ignorant and saying that, you know, anyone should have lost his life. That's not where I'm going at with this, but he should have known better. You know what I'm saying?
He should have known better. It's definitely bigger than, you know, I mean, of course, you don't, like you said, you don't want somebody to lose their life. But the bigger point is, you know, you have these athletes, and primarily you have these young black athletes who you're in this position that you wanted to be in all your life. You've dreamt of this position. And then you put yourself in a position that could throw all of this stuff away. Because it doesn't even have to be a motor vehicle accident. Michael Vick put himself in a position to lose everything. You know, you're a minority amongst minorities. You know what I'm saying? You made it from everything. You made it from everything that you've been through in your life. You made it through, you know, the gang violence. You made it through the drug abuse families. You made it through the alcoholism in your family. You made it through the poverty. And you accomplish your goal, you're recognizing your dream, and you take a chance at throwing it away by just simply not taking the safety precautions. It's not about well, you shouldn't drive a dirt bike or you shouldn't drive a motorcycle, but you wear the PPE. You wear the helmet. I mean, I know it might sound lame, but in being lame, you still protect your millions of dollars and you protect your legacy and you protect your future. His father died in 2014, so he dedicated all of last season to his father. His father, I think, he passed away the day before or after he was drafted. It was really close to him being drafted when his father passed away. certain things you, that are happening in life, you should see as a warning sign in the sense to say it should make you want to live a different life. And again, I'm not like, you know, condemning this particular guy, but for me, it's a message to all athletes. When you make it, just like freaking Terrell Suggs. This guy get locked up last week for a suspended license. Like, come on, brother, you're a millionaire. You can't get your license straight. He was in a single car accident. Like, what about your money, you know, it just causes you to stupid-ass decisions that can be costly on a major level? Like, what, I mean, I get it. You know, the song back in the day, money brings more problems. I get it. You know what I'm saying? But I really don't understand if you're not happy with your life, you got the money to get the help. You know what I'm saying? If you need to go to the grocery store, you don't have a damn license, you got the money to pay somebody. Like, protect your life, protect your legacy, protect your family's future, protect your family, period. But,
the off-season makes these cats stupid. It does. Yeah. Off-season makes these cats stupid. The majority of this shit happens during the off-season. They're sitting around, they're getting fat, they're getting bored, and they just get stupid. Not thinking long term about their families and the effect that these things are going to happen on their family. So, you know, like you said, protect your, but you never once said protect your life. Protect your damn life. You bought mama a house. You bought mama a house. Who gonna pay for that house now? Because that NFL team, trust me, they protecting their money. So if that's in fact the cause of your death, guess who ain't getting no money?
Yeah.
Trust me. Those clauses are in every contract.
The team will sit there and they will, you know, with deepest sympathy, we regret to inform everybody that blah, blah, blah has lost their life. You know, it saddens us, blah, blah, blah. After they finish that press conference, they right back into the office and saying, okay, well, look, we got to make sure that we protect you. And we like 7 million, we about to be 7 million under cap. We extinguish this contract, we'll be, you know, 7.5 million under cap. Like, it's a business at the end of the day. You know, there's a certain loyalty to some people, but after the spotlight, after the cameras are off, it's back to business. And these young men have to understand that, even in the military, you know, somebody told me a long time ago, the military doesn't care about family. And I was defending, like, yeah, they care about us. I was young and dumb and immature. But when it really comes down to it, then you care less about your family. You know, the old saying back in the day is a family, if the military wanted you to have a family, they issued you one. And that's the truth. So you have to do everything in your power as an individual to protect yourself and protect your family. And
absolutely,
having activities like that is not smart. It's not protecting yourself. It's not protecting your family.
Now, you know, so I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, they just cut Will Hill. Will Hill, on drugs, second time he violated the league's substance abuse policy, he got suspended for 10 games. Freaking player from the Steelers, same situation, he just got suspended for 10 games. Yo, these dudes aren't playing. And I don't understand what these freaking players think that they can get away with. You're not getting away. It's not going to happen. It will happen to you. I'll say it again. It will happen to you. They will catch your ass and they will slap you down. Because, as you just said, cousin, it is a business. So they cut your ass because you violated the substance abuse policy. Guess what happened? That money that they was going to pay you, guess where it just went back to? Hand was going out. Hand just went, whoop, that goes right back in my pocket. So now your money is right back in their pocket, too. That's what they're going to do with that. They're going to spend it on somebody else?
I mean, they're definitely not, you know, wanting and you know, hoping that people get hemmed up. But when they do get hemmed up, they damn sure not crying about it.
Okay.
They're not like, oh, my gosh, you know, why? They're like, oh man, like, sorry, God, but we saved some money. You know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm.
they, you know, You have to understand, man. It's all a business. People say it's a family. Oh, we're a family. We're a family. We're a family. In families, money destroys families. So if money could destroy real families, blood relatives, what do you think is going to happen when it comes, you know, when it comes down to you and somebody that's not blood related and have, and you know, only met you a couple of years ago? You know, yeah, all that family is going to go out the damn door. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
You know, young man, please protect yourself, man. Protect your interests. Protect your legacy. Protect your family. And stop, you know, becoming idiots during the off season. Like if you get bored in the off season, go volunteer at a shelter. You know, start yourself a nonprofit organization. Do good in the community. You know, that's what's going to that'll keep from being bored. But you know, that's kind of lame though to be giving back to your community as a young man.
And do not have sex with your friend's wife, which Hulk Hogan did. Which Hulk Hogan did, and this mug walks away with $115 million for having sex with his friend's wife. But Hulk Hogan sued Gawker Media for their acquisition of a sex tape that was made by Bubba the Love Sponge Clem. Bubba the Love Sponge Clem and Hulk Hogan were boys. Hulk Hogan messed around and started tapping Bubba's wife. Bubba makes a sex tape of Hulk Hogan with Bubba. Hulk Hogan claimed that he never knew that he was under surveillance and he did not give any consent to be recorded. So once they published the sex tape, he hits them with a lawsuit. Now, the jury down in Florida, because we're staying in Florida, awarded him $115 million just the other day. However, Gawker was already ready for an appeal, and the state of Florida caps appeal bonds at $50 million. So Hogan will probably walk away with $30 to $50 million when all this is said and done. But yeah, don't mess around with your boy's wife if you get bored either, because that ain't cool, and it could cost you a whole lot of money.
Hey, but it was funny though, because when Hulk Hogan was on the stand, they started talking about his endowment. So they was like, did you have to say something along the lines of, you know, Hulk Hogan has a tennis penis? He was like, no, Hulk Hogan doesn't have a tennis penis, but Terry, whatever his last name is,
yeah,
he has a tennis penis. I was like, yo, he's an idiot, man. No, I never said Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch penis. Like, I'm not Hulk Hogan. My name is Terry Sozo. Like, yeah, he has a 10-inch penis, but I don't know about Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, I think he has like a 5-inch penis.
Oh, my God.
Hilarious, man. Yeah.
All right. more doom and gloom, and then we'll go back to the upswing, going over to Texas. So, David Wilson was convicted on Friday and sentenced to life in the rape of a 20-month-old toddler and a 12-year-old girl, infecting both with HIV. Now, there's a special place in hell for a person who knowingly has HIV and infecting people, but there's an extra special place in hell, and I really don't believe in hell. I'm just using that as a term that most of you all can relate to, for folks whom rape a 12-year-old girl and a 24-month-old toddler. Like, come on, dude. You know, I mean, I'm 41, and I can't talk to a young lady that's 24. I can't imagine. You talking about a toddler, a 2-year-old, really? A 2-year-old? You are that desperate that you going to prey on a 2-year-old? Sick. And he deserves every moment of it.
The key word that you said was sick. I don't think it's about a desperation. The guy is clearly sick. And, yeah, there's no excuse at all. You know, I think he deserves straight death. But he got the max that I guess that they could impose on him. But, you know, definitely a sick individual to do something like that, man. Like, whenever you make a decision, there's a clear thought process. And even though in real time it's like lightning speed, but you still have an opportunity to stop yourself mid-motion if that's what you choose to do. So clearly, like I said, he's sick. I mean, to a 24-month-old child, a 12-year-old child, and you have HIV, you're a sick individual. I don't know if it was a retaliatory thing or what, but that's definitely a sick guy, man, and he definitely does have a special place in hell. I could say so many things about my personal feelings about what I want to happen to him. But yeah.
Oh, he gonna get it. Sick. I mean, just like Jerry got his ass whipped the other day in prison. He got all bloodied up. He gonna get it. You know, the fear is gonna be because he has HIV. But once he gets on the ward, probably for people who have HIV, yeah, somebody will take him out. Because they won't care because they have the disease themselves. Somebody will take him out. He's not gonna last long. He won't last long. Just like the dude that from Cleveland a couple years ago that had the girls in the basement for those umpteen years. Yeah, he's not gonna last long. This dude ain't gonna last long. He won't last long in prison at all. Put his ass in that section because most prisons have it now where the inmates, all of them have HIV. Yeah, he won't last long. He won't last long. I want to talk about the dancing daughter and father. This duo too is in Texas, and they currently have over 500,000 likes on Instagram. Mike and Asia are their name, and that's all they were identified by. But it started because dad likes to listen to hip hop, and his daughter was dancing with him, and she just continued to grow in her dance moves, and he decided to record them, and they've been making videos since she was a toddler of them dancing together. And they've gotten a lot of followers doing that. And it was a real cute story, man. It was something I needed for this week. I was, because of all the doom and gloom that we've talked about over the past couple of weeks. And she can dance. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, girl can get it, man.
She's into it, and it's a beautiful thing seeing them do this together. And I have much respect for him, and hopefully this will keep her on the right path as she gets older, because she loves her dad. I mean, she really loves her dad, and that's what's up. There were some pictures of Sasha and Malia the other day that hit the internet when they were looking at their father, and just that love in their faces, man. There's nothing better when you have that type of connection with your children, without a doubt. There's just nothing better. And it's looked over a lot, but those little things mean a lot. They're very important to a child's development, and they're very important to your growth. I was in line just yesterday getting lunch, and I had a conversation with three young ladies, and we were talking about how we've changed throughout the years and how much our children have helped change us. And there's a lot to be learned from them. There's a lot more that you learn about yourself when you have them. It's awesome, man. It really is. You know, swinging back over the story coming out of South Carolina, the young man fought for 3 years to get his daughter back. Now, his name is Chris Emanuel. He's 25. He lives in Aiken, South Carolina. His daughter's mother and he met at work. They were both forklift operators. And when she got pregnant, she told him, it's an interracial couple, got pregnant, she told him. It was strong. It was going well. But slowly but surely, the mother started pulling back. You know, she wouldn't see him as often in person. She would tell him about doctor's appointments, but tell him he didn't have to come because her mother was coming. She didn't want him to come as well. Long story short, he got nervous. He got some great advice from his sisters, and they told him to register for on the Responsible Father Registry. Now, South Carolina is one of 25 states that actually has this. It notifies unwed fathers of the birth of a child and if an adoption is in the works for the child. He gets notified of the birth. He gets notified of the adoption. And, you know, he goes to work. He's like, yo, this ain't cool. you know, I'm a fight it, and he did. You know, he got himself together. He got lawyers involved. It took him 3 years, but he has a daughter back. You know, and he doesn't speak of her mother at all. He actually refers to her as the egg donor. That's a reverse.
Oh, wow.
We're normally referred to as the sperm donor.
Yeah,
but he refers to her as the egg donor. There's no relationship between them at all. There's no relationship that he's trying to foster between her mother and her at all at this time. We'll see what happens later. But from the numbers, in 2014, there were 30,000 births to unwed parents, but there are only 300 fathers signed up for the Responsible Father Registry. So that's roughly 1%. 1% of the fathers were actively looking and concerned about their children.
And you know what, man? That's not necessarily a surprise to me, because for one, most men don't know about this registry.
Mm-hmm.
Two, most men don't know about it because, in my opinion, in my experiences, and what I know now in dealing with the community, they don't want you to know about it because it affects business. The flip side, it's refreshing, though, because when you hear a success like this, it shows that it actually can work in your favor if you're willing to put in the work. It's not something mm-hmm. you just go to court and say, I want my child, and then automatically you get your child. No, you actually have to put in the work and do it through the system and be steadfast with it and be consistent and constantly push it and stick with it in order for you to get what you want. You know, it's kind of unfortunate because with fathers, we have to fight a little bit harder to be responsible fathers. whereas most times with the mothers, the bite is always given and it's just automatic. You know, so it's kind of unfortunate that it goes that way, but it's not to say that the system can't work in your favor if you're willing to put in the work.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful thing to see this cat actually go for it and, you know, dedicate himself to being with his daughter, being a part of his daughter's life, raising his daughter. Extremely happy for him. I hope she comes to realize and recognize how great of a father that she has. And I wish them the best as she gets older. Because raising a young girl by yourself, I don't even want to know. You know what I'm saying? Lord, I don't even want to know. But, you know, hell, dealing with grown women is enough to make my head hurt. But good luck, bro. And congratulations, without a doubt. Now,
oh yeah, for sure.
Let's do it. NCAA, baby. It is March. It is the madness of March. And so they fall. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah. Michigan State. I picked them as a winner in one of my brackets. And my bracket just like shot to hell, man.
Yo, Stephen F. Austin beat West Virginia. First off, I had to figure out where the hell Stephen F. Austin was. I'm like, where the hell is
Austin?
Cool. Like, same thing I thought. I'm like, it is in Texas, but it's not Austin. It's in Nacogdoches, Texas. And they didn't just win the game. They balled so hard. I'm not even going to – I watched that game, and they won 70-56. It was a convincing victory. Smothering defense. They are not that big. They are not that tall. But they smothered the other team. They pestered West Virginia. They got all in their heads early. I mean, they hit them in the chest early and stayed there pounding. It was like, what the hell just happened? That was a great – saw it, was amazed, happy for them. The Cinderella slipper, though, is not on anyone's foot because Hawaii beat Cal. Cal is extremely athletic. The one chink in Cal's armor was they are young. They are extremely young. They matured throughout the year, yes, but when it counted and when it mattered, they just didn't have it. They couldn't keep it together, and they lost by 11 points, 77-66. Middle Tennessee beat Michigan State, as you just said. I thought Michigan State was a lot for the Elite Eight, if not the Final Four. I really was looking at them making it into the Final Four, but I was like, if they fall any place, it'll be the Elite Eight. These jokers got slapped. Now, they only lost by 9 points, but still, they got beat. Northern Iowa beat Texas. Not a huge defeat, but you're talking about a number 6 seed in Texas get defeated by a number 11 seed in Northern Iowa, and they lost from a half-court heave at the buzzer. Went in 75-72. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? But the shocker is Yale. Yale beat Baylor. A number 12 seed in Yale beat a number 5 seed in Baylor. And if you're sitting at home, you don't understand what these seeds are. Think of it like David and Goliath. The lower the number, you're Goliath. The higher the number, you're David. And these jokers got their asses handed to them. I think they slept at the wheel, and Yale just kept on playing. Tight victory for them, 75-79. But Yale marched on to see another day, and they meet us today. They play Duke today in the round of 32. And as it goes, you all know, first there was 64, now there's 32. By Sunday, there'll be 16, and that 16 will be sweet. It will be sweet. No. It will be sweet.
I was hurt when I saw my bracket crumbling. I was like, oh, man. But I was like, yo, I'm cool with this. I really like this year for some reason. The commentators have been saying it. The analysts have been saying it all year long. There's really not a clear dominant team in college basketball this year. So that, for me, that made it, I thought it was going to be boring. But it's actually bringing more excitement to this year's tournament because – you don't know. Like, it could be a damn Stephen F. Austin or a Middle Tennessee. The way I saw Middle Tennessee ball yesterday as a team, for me, is not, you know, unreasonable to think that they might have a chance to actually win the championship because they balled as a team. You know, and again, it's a chance for you to see kids that you've never heard of before, unless you're a fan of that team or you live in the area and stuff like that. I've never seen highlights of Middle Tennessee. I saw highlights of Northern Iowa. I saw highlights of Yale, of course. That gave me some idea that they might make a run. But to see the way Middle Tennessee handled Tom Izzo's Michigan State Spartans, you know what I'm saying? Like, and Denzel Valentine, you know, the front runner for a player of the year right now, in some people's opinion, for me to see how they handled that team, I'm like, oh, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually won the tournament. Now, the good thing about it, you have a second chance tournament challenge bracket that you can fill out, and you can redo your damn bracket. You know what I'm saying? So I might get a couple more upsets along the way. But, you know, some of the teams like Wichita State and stuff like that, I picked Hawaii over Cal in one of my brackets. You have to pick some upsets, and you have to be calculated in where you pick them at. I'm really not surprised on how things are going, man. It is crazy. Like, I was sitting there yesterday all day with my freaking jaw dropped watching some of these scores and watching how some of these teams are putting up fights. Like, even in the Maryland game, Maryland has been kind of suspect a little bit later on during the season, but I didn't expect them to come to the tournament and have a close game. But the game ended up being close. I really thought it was going to run off with that win yesterday. The game ended up close. We ended up pulling out with the W. But
Temple,
I don't know, man.
Temple almost won.
Right. Temple almost won. When I was picking that game, I was hesitant, like, damn, like, I think Temple's going to win, but I'm going to go here. And I didn't pick Temple, and I'm glad I didn't because I'd have really been hurt.
Who do you think amongst the winners between Hawaii, Middle Tennessee, Stephen F. Austin, Northern Iowa, and Yale will make it to the Sweet 16?
I think, I think Yale's going to beat Duke, and I think that I think Middle Tennessee matches up well against Syracuse. So I can see Middle Tennessee pulling out that W. So I think it's going to be – I think both of those probably make it to the Elite Eight, man, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Your hatred against Duke is clear, and I understand that, so I won't hold that against you.
See, I was going down my bracket, and they happened to be at the top of the bracket. That's the only reason why I said Duke first. Or else I would have said them second because I knew he was going to go there. But no, I'm really looking at the matchups and how weak Duke has been playing this year. They've been really inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Like they actually was out of the top 25, mm-hmm. I think, like for a couple of weeks up this season. And I've never seen that before. So,
it's
happening I don't think I've ever seen it before. You know, I wasn't following college basketball for a long time. So, it's something that I'm not used to seeing. So, I don't think that with the way they played throughout the season and being inconsistent and they're kind of sporadic, I think that I think that they really might lose that game. I think it's going to be a close game. But we'll see.
Okay. Well, you know, the time will tell, and it's close to tip-off time, so the time is getting nearer and nearer, and that's fine. I think that Hawaii has a great chance of making it to this week's season. I've known about the team, not watched them a lot, but I've known about the team. The way they work together really works for me. The NCAA, the 20, is all about guard play. You have strong guard play, and you have a good center. It doesn't have to be the greatest. You have a good center that can just help you occupy that space, can secure those rebounds for you, and you'll be fine. And I think they have the combination to do both. With the way they handle Cal.
Because I picked Yale over Duke, so you're going to pick Hawaii over Maryland?
Yeah. No, that's not even it. I'm just saying that I think they have a better chance. I think Maryland and Cal are very similar teams. They're very athletic, but Maryland has more composure than Cal. But I still think that Hawaii will beat Maryland, to be honest with you. And that's my pick. I don't think anyone else is going to make it. We'll see between today and tomorrow.
Tennessee versus Syracuse? I think so.
You know, remember a couple of years ago when Syracuse won the national championship and they slept into it? I mean, they really slept into it. Like, UConn won it. UConn slept the way into the freaking national championship. It's like, how the hell did UConn just win the national championship? It was just a very sleepy type of build-up for them, and I think Syracuse can handle it. I think they can.
The only reason why I gave Syracuse a chance is because of coach. Like, if they were coached by anybody else, I would probably be like, they're going to get killed. Like, because I don't see any player on Syracuse that's bringing the noise and taking charge of that team like they should. But that's the same reason why I picked Michigan State to win the championship, just because of Tom Izzo and Denzel Valentine.
Right.
Other than that, I didn't see any other in the guy Forbes, I guess. But other than that, I really didn't see like the rest of the team carrying them through. But with Tom Izzo at the wheel, with Denzel Valentine and the guy Forbes on the front tires, they can steer that team to a championship. But it fell apart. So the only reason why I gave Syracuse any hope is because of coach. I don't see anybody on that roster that's really taking it to any team. And making a whole bunch of noise. But you got coach. Just like with Duke. Duke is always in it because of Coach K. You know what I'm saying? Like, they can have a whole team full of freshmen, but Coach K and his genius will make that freshman team competitive. And so, again, I'm not saying it's going to be blown out. I think it will be a tight game, but I think the spirit of March Madness is going to take over, and Middle Tennessee is going to beat Syracuse, and Yale is going to beat Duke.
Okay.
And Hawaii
is
going to smash by my boys.
I think that you're delusional, and that's fine. But this year I've declared that North Carolina will win the national championship. I've said that. I hold by that. And I really see it. They're hitting on all cylinders at the right time. They really start to play together as a team. They have the size. They have the speed. I really don't see many people that can beat them. So, but no matter what, tip-off time is coming, and we will see. And that be the size of that. Family, I got to run. You all have a great week. We look forward to seeing you next week. And as you very well know, if it's Saturday morning, we are keeping it real. I'm out, cousin.
Holla at me.
Peace.
One.